Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive reader from New Jersey, and your moderator for this morning. Today is Sunday, July 21st, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, July 19th are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,587. That's 21,587. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 21,588. That's 21,588. This morning, A Vision for You celebrates its 12th anniversary with a very special Sunday edition. 12 testimonials as to the experience and the results of the program of recovery and a relationship with power. Many people consider the program of recovery, the 12 steps, one of the greatest miracles of the 20th century. There's no telling how many lives have been touched and transformed by the 12 steps. The sole purpose of this step work is to find power through the experience of a spiritual awakening. The 12 steps enable people of all walks of life, all different types, from all different backgrounds, people who normally would not mix, in spite of all odds, to experience change, transformation, like never seen anywhere else. Yes, as the Big Book states, it means that all of us, whatever our race, our creed, or our color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. What a miracle! 12 simple steps which anybody can apply. Today, A Vision for You celebrates its 12th anniversary, 12 years of coming together each morning to crack open the basic text of Alcoholics Anonymous and to bring it to life based on our experience as recovered compulsive overeaters. The spiritual chain reaction that grew from Ebby and Bill W. to Dr. Bob in Akron to Roseanne S. in California, with Overeaters Anonymous beginning on January 19th, 1960, to A Vision for You, which began on July 18th, 2012, and has stretched to countless compulsive overeaters with a membership in excess of 12,000 and represents all 50 states and over 65 countries. I am and will be forever eternally grateful to God for the inspiration, the energy, and the vision stirring within my heart, my mind, and my soul to bring your voices shouting the great news of recovery and freedom to the lines and around the globe. The goal of living a service-driven life is to align yourself with God's will and let it flow powerfully through you, enabling you to accomplish purposeful and meaningful feats. When we align the stream of our will, with God's goals and plans, then all the other blessings will flow abundantly through us. We need to choose to make God's goal our goal, God's plans our plans, God's principles, our principles, God's ways, our ways. The more we choose and align ourselves with God's will, purpose, and plan, the more we feel filled with the fullness of God's presence. As the Big Book states, we have recovered and been given the power to help others. Yes, God uses recovered people. Yes, we celebrate the wonderful growth of A Vision for You in the 12th year of its founding. We marvel and rejoice that the near impossible beginning with 40 members to now a membership of over 12,000 has really happened. But congratulatory periods lead to regression. We continue to have a responsibility to carry the message of recovery to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. No matter how different our own personal concerns, we are all bound together by one common responsibility. Clearly, our first duty to A Vision for You and Overeaters Anonymous's future is to maintain and grow in full strength what we now have. Never should we be lulled into complacent self-satisfaction by our seeming success or allow unthinking enthusiasm to put us off the main track. This is the subtle temptation which could stagnate us today or disintegrate us tomorrow. Our chief responsibility to the newcomer must always be an adequate presentation of the program of recovery. Our fellowship has been permitted to achieve only by God's grace, only by God's love and mercy. As a fellowship, we ask nothing of power, nothing of personal success or recognition, but we do have an enormous interest in having influence. We want to touch lives. As we better use the language of the heart, may we continue to grow, please God. For so long as we remain sure that our growth is God's gift rather than any virtue earned or created by ourselves, and for so long as our fellowship around the world continues to be ever more inclusive of those in need, and for so long as we speak the language of love and the language of service, for just so long will our true ambition be the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. Today, you will hear from 12 recovered compulsive overeaters, 12 voices, each describing in their own personal way how the individual steps have changed them. 12 voices weaving together 12 stories of transformation, messages of depth and weight, creating a powerful message of hope and possibility. Let's get started. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. And I welcome Joe M. from Minnesota.
Good morning, Leah. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And happy 12th anniversary to A Vision for You. That is wonderful. My task is to talk about step one. I'm going to first begin with a short qualification. My high weight was 254 pounds. That's 120 pounds heavier than I am now. My overeating started early in my life and just continued to get worse over time. The quantities of food got bigger. The binges got closer together. They became daily. The sense of urgency went up where the consequences of not overeating became unbearable. My anxiety went sky high when I wasn't overeating. So I ended up living a life where I had to overeat in order to survive inside. I didn't know the nature of my condition, but I certainly suffered from it for decades. My abstinence date is November 10th, 2009, and I am now at a healthy weight, down 120 pounds from my high. My task is to talk about step one, which says we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. The Big Book says in the chapter More About Alcoholism on page 30 that we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. So I translate that to say, I learned that I had to fully concede to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater. And what does that mean to say that I'm a compulsive overeater? Well, they define this in the next paragraph. They say, we alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. I am someone who has lost the ability to control my eating. I never recover control. This is not a temporary loss of control or an intermittent loss of control. It is total and it is permanent. There are two symptoms of my powerlessness. One is physical and the other is mental. The physical symptom manifests itself by an inability to stop overeating once I start to eat. My body has a response that I can't control. My body gets a craving for more food when I eat sugar, flour, saturated fat, high salt, and volume. Once this allergy of the body got set in place, there would be no turning back for me. I will never not have the allergy of the body. The second symptom of my powerlessness is mental, and this manifests in a mental obsession for food when I'm not eating. I am, as the doctor's opinion says, restless, irritable, and discontented until I can quiet that down with food, that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few bites. I can't control either of these symptoms, although there have been many times in my life when I tried mightily to control them. I have tried many methods of control. Method number one, the passage of time. I've been off the bad foods for a few weeks. I can reintroduce them again. Method number two, weight loss. I've lost 20 pounds. I'm at a normal weight. I can reintroduce those sugary, flowery foods. Method number three, fantasizing. I had fantasies that someone would make a deal with me if I did something disgusting and then they would take all my weight off. Method number four, eating baked foods instead of fried foods. Certainly that must be the way to sanity, eating something that I perceived as healthier. Method number five, eating fruit juice sweetened food instead of cane sugar. Now certainly that should be the answer because hey, it comes from fruit and fruit's natural. Method number six, paid weight loss plans. I did two paid weight loss programs as a teenager. Certainly that would be the answer. Those people must know what they're talking about. Method number seven, going to an outpatient eating disorders clinic. Okay, I'm starting to move out of the diet mentality. I have an eating disorders. They specialize in this area. Certainly that must be the answer. Method number eight, self-knowledge. Learning things about myself that were true and trying to rely on those for an answer to my problem. And you know, I could add to this list, and I'm sure you could add to the list for yourself. All these methods did was give me very short relief, short reprieve from my misery. But like the big book says on page 30, all of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Every time I went back into the food after a period of control, I felt awful about myself. What's wrong with me? How come I can't get this together? It wasn't until I came to Overeaters Anonymous, and then while I was in the fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, was introduced to the program of recovery that I learned the exact nature of my problem. And the exact nature of my problem is powerlessness. It is because I have no power that I am in this fellowship and in this program, and there is no other reason. If I were able to control my condition, if I had any power over it whatsoever, I wouldn't need a spiritual overhaul. I wouldn't need other compulsive overeaters. I could just apply a method of control and go on my merry way, and there are people in this world who can actually do that. They recognize that they're having some problems with food, they apply a method of control, and that works for them over the long haul. I've known people like that. I'm not one of them. We say that every step has promises. Well, what are the promises of step one? I find those promises on page 42 in the big book, in Fred's story. Fred is the alcoholic, and he goes on a business trip, and everything's going fine, seemingly. He has a couple of highballs, and he goes head first back into the alcohol, and he gets drunk, and he's passed out for a few days, and he wakes up, and he re-encounters the members of AA, and then he says, I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. So what happened to me as a result of admitting my powerlessness? I felt hopelessly defeated, and it was a crushing blow. Again, on page 30, where it says, we had to concede to our innermost selves. I don't have to admit this to anyone else. And in fact, trying to use another person as a substitute for my innermost self does not work for me. I had to go into the quiet, solitary space of my own soul and admit the overwhelming reality of my condition. There is no good news in step one. The smashing of a delusion hurts. But like being extracted by the jaws of life from a severe car accident, it has to be done to get me out of being trapped by an unbearable state of affairs. There is only one thing to do after admitting my powerlessness, and that is to fall headfirst into the next 11 steps, and there is such good news in that. And with that, I will pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Joe M. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Leslie W. from Georgia.
Hi, my name is Leslie W. Thank you, Leah, for this privilege. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I mark the date of my abstinence in this program from October 25th, 2016. I've lost 80 pounds in this program and kept it off, and I cannot believe that A Vision for You has been going for 12 years. When I first came on the line, it was early 2016. I had a baby and a toddler, and I was definitely not abstinent. I was much heavier than I am today. I was depressed and frazzled. I was really overwhelmed by life and definitely not sane. But I was really good at faking it, which is why a lot of people didn't know my problem. I was looking for a way to find recovery without having to leave my house, getting to face-to-face meetings while also being an overachieving stay-at-home mom were just not compatible with one another, it seemed. So I knew I had to find another way, and it just happened that I found this line and knew instantly from the first 5 minutes that I had found something different than what I was used to hearing in other meetings. I found real recovery, real hope. This telephone meeting is life-saving. Real hope is the principle. Hope is the principle of step two, coming to believe in a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Page 45 of the big book of the chapter, We Agnostics, says, and page 44 says, if a mere code of morals were sufficient to overcome our disease, we would have overcome it a long time ago. The reason we need to take step two in order to recover from the disease of compulsive overeating is that if that is what we have, is because we do not possess the needed power to overcome it on our own. And Leah talked about that in her intro. Acceptance of this fact was an essential part of my taking a step two. If I still believe that I have the power to overcome this problem, then I'm not going to be able to take step two. So let's say that we believe in the validity of the need to take this step. Now what do we do? What if we are belligerent about God? What if we are indifferent towards God? What if we do not believe in the existence of God at all? First of all, this organization does not demand that you believe anything, and that's taken from step two of the AA 12 and 12. They are simply suggestions. And second, to get abstinent is to stay abstinent. You don't have to swallow all of step two right now. Kind of like the expression, how do you eat an entire elephant? One bite at a time, right? Third, all you need is an open mind. We just need to be teachable, to listen, to learn from those of us who have walked this path already. page 46 of the Big Book says that the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. Many people in this program make the group their higher power until they can come to form one of their own. I want to take a moment to speak to the bewildered one, the one who thinks himself lost to the comfort of any conviction at all because he has tried the way of faith and he has found it wanting. Why, can I ask you? And I ask myself the same question, why have you found it wanting? Is it because terrible things have happened to you? They've happened to me too. Is it because you haven't gotten the things you wanted out of life or the people in it? Well, I haven't either. Many of us are in a fight for our life in many ways. It isn't a straight line. Step two is not a multiple choice examination. It's a fill in the blank. There are no exact answers and no one can tell you what to do or who to believe in. You must decide that for yourself. The 12 and 12 says that defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many an alcoholic or a compulsive overeater in my case. I am a defiant, rebellious person by nature. I can pretend not to be, but deep down that defiance is always there and it's lurking. Sometimes defiance can work in my favor if I've been wronged and need to stand my ground. But when I decide that the one who has wronged me is God, then I'm in trouble because I have nowhere else to go from there and I begin to self-destruct. It's in that place where I believe God has deserted me or thrown me to the wolves. I no longer believe that I will be protected in that place because, in fact, I haven't been. So I tell myself, I feel it's all up to me and I'm the one who must protect myself and take care of myself because no one else can or will. And many times it's the ones who were supposed to love me and care for me that have betrayed me or did not care for me in the manner in which they should have. Those are the ones, the real ones to blame, I believe, for this crisis of faith, not God himself. So do I throw the baby out with the bathwater? Do I choose to live without the presence of a higher power in my life? Do I really believe that I will be better off that way? The Big Book on page 55 says that actually we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. We found that great reality deep down within us. I can choose to go through life either acknowledging and cooperating with that great reality and fundamental idea of God within me, or I can go through life without acknowledging and cooperating. Either way, I'm going to go through life. Life is hard and terrible things sometimes happen. People harm us, betray us, lie to us, steal from us, abuse us, attempt to take and undermine the things which are most precious to us. I should know they've occurred in my life as well as yours. Life is not fair. It will never be. I'm going to experience it either way. I've decided that I would rather experience it relying upon the one who created me, the one I was created for, and the one who lies deep down within me, that great reality. God is either everything or nothing. God either is or isn't. And I know what my choice is to be. And I ask you today, what is yours? And I think with that, I'm going to pass. And thank you, Leah, so much for asking me to be here today. It is an honor and a privilege.
Thank you, Leslie W. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Rohan S. from New Jersey.
Good morning, Rohan S. from New Jersey, recovered and grateful compulsive overeater, and happy 12 years to Vision for You. My abstinence date is April 10th, 2023, so I have a little over 15 months, and my highest weight was 260 pounds, and today I sit and maintain at 180 pounds. for about 20 years. I was just, you know, what I called yo-yo dieting, going on my binges and then doing everything I could to restrict and just being on that roller coaster of a ride that was basically hell for me for so long until OA came into my life, especially A Vision for You. And I started working these steps, and I got to step 3, you know, which reads, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. But the thing is when I was a newcomer and I read it as turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, comma, who hates me. And with that definition, it's really hard to really get anywhere, you know? It seems so daunting to me in the beginning, like turn my entire life and all my thoughts and all my will over the care of God. At step 3 already? Oh my goodness. And to this God who I've always believed in but has never really been there for me, right? Why don't I have $10 million in the bank? Why don't I have my dream partner? Why am I always super anxious and fearful, right? Like, God would be here for me and do these things. But, you know, that's why I love, and I'm going to break down here the current way the third step is read. And when there's words I don't understand, I try to look them up. And the first 3 words, made a decision, really confused me, because I didn't really ever understand what it means to make a decision. You know, I've never done that. The only decision I ever knew I was going to make is what I was going to eat. And even that I didn't ever live up to, because I always ate more than I said I was going to. But I looked it up, and decision, it actually comes from the Latin word decidere, which means to eliminate all other options. And I really love this definition, because when I come to step 3, this is a spiritual program of action, you know, and this is the first action step I really get to take. And step 1 and 2 really helped me with that, because I get to use my decades of experience to see all the options I tried in my active addiction, all the strategies, all the methods, all the fancy diets and simple diets and clever ways of restricting, and, you know, the hundreds and thousands of different combinations I did my very best to try. And with step 3 is the first time I get to take all those strategies, all those ideas, and finally say, I eliminate you. You know, I, in my heart, fully concede that I have tried you with the best of my ability, and I now surrender the fact that you will ever work for me in my life. It's over. And then, you know, the next part is to turn my will and my life over. And, you know, I use the 12 and 12 for inspiration here. And they use the analogy of a locked door. And I kind of see it as, you know, my addiction with food. I'm in this very small room with a door that's locked that I can't open. And it feels like prison, and then I'm trapped. And it sucks, because all I need to do is find a key to this lock and open that door. And what the 12 and 12 references is that key is just willingness. You know, and I always confused willingness, because I thought I needed a whole bunch of it. But the truth, and the reason I thought so is because once I have that key and put it in the lock, I get to swing that door wide open and keep it wide open. But that doesn't need to be the case. What I've learned, even with, you know, my recovery, that has been a miracle, but yet so slow, is that I put that key of willingness into the lock, and I just need to open the door a little bit. A jar is beautiful. And my self-will, what it tries to do is it constantly shuts that door. You know, and I always thought that I needed to keep that door wide open. But the key for me, no pun intended, in recovery has been that every time that I shut that door with my self-will is to use these tools and this program and fellows and God to reopen that door back up just a little bit, you know? And that has been my experience. My selfishness and self-centered, I can have the most peaceful, spiritual, serene day being of service to others. And the next morning I wake up full of self-pity, full of fear for no good reason. You know, the door has been shut. And so moving on to the next, so turn my will and my lives over to the care of God. You know, that is my favorite word in that step, care. In my recovery has been just practicing and accepting and learning how much God really loves me and what that really means in my life. You know, I always thought that the things that my heart desires I could never have because God judged me for wanting those things, you know, and I was a bad person for wanting those things. And the only way to soothe that pain of me believing that God didn't love me was with food. Because, you know, it taught me that food loves me. And that food is always there for me. Food will comfort me. And that's always been my solution in active addiction to all my problems in life has been food. And what Vision for You has taught me is that, no, God can be your new solution, this God that loves me. And a lot of my meditation practices, a lot of my prayers revolves around really reflecting on how much God loves me. And when I start to internalize that, then it's like, and it makes so much sense in my heart that I don't need food anymore because I only ever used it to love me, to feel comforted, to feel like I mattered in this world. And I don't need that because now God makes me feel that way. I don't need my parents to make me feel that way. I don't need a career to make me feel that way. I don't need millions and millions of dollars in the bank to make me feel that way. As long as for today, I sit and pray and meditate, you know, God can make me feel that way. And lastly, God, as I understood him, you know, one of my issues, and this is the last thing I'll wrap up with, is that I always would assume that the definitions I heard about God were true, and they were always negative ones and confinements to my life. But this is the really freeing wording of step three, you know, and it ties with what I was saying about the love of God. You know, God wants the best for me. And my conception of God gets to revolve around that fact. And a part of being the best for me is God wants me to be abstinent. You know, a lot of my recovery has been convincing that, no, God wants me to enjoy the delicious foods, quote unquote delicious. But these were just ways and sneaky ways of my disease to convince me to eat the food. This wasn't really God. Because truly, when I'm absent, it's not about not having or having the food. It's about the relief of the mental obsession and getting to walk through the doorway of happiness, joy, and freedom. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Rohan S. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Evan R. from California. Evan R., star one to unmute. Thank you for your patience as we unmute Evan R. Evan R., step four.
Hi, this is Evan. Can you hear me?
Yes, Evan. Thank you very much for your service.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Leia, for asking me to share. I apologize for the technical difficulties. I'm so honored to be here and be a part of this. I am such an incredible fan of these 12 steps and the miracles that it's created in my life and the lives of others. I have 15 years of abstinence and I'm maintaining a 50-pound weight loss. And I may not get through this without crying, so just please bear with me. I was very touched by all the shares that have come before, and I was thinking on my food journey, and just to qualify, to give you a sense of the type of overeater that I was, I was a waiter, you know, before I got abstinent, and I would eat my dinner at 10 o'clock, which included, a healthy dessert. And then I found it necessary at 2 in the morning to go eat another dinner. So I would go find a fast food place and I would eat an entire another meal and go to sleep and wouldn't be able to eat till 5 p.m. the next day. And just thinking about that, it's so alien to me now that it's quite incredible. When we were talking about what steps to speak on, you know, I wanted to speak on 1, 2, and then 4 because one to me is the absolute bedrock of this whole thing. You know, in the 12 and 12, it says this is the taproot of our society. It's built on this personal powerlessness. And I had a lot of trouble with that for a long time in OA, until I heard one time that, eating disorders are three of the top four. I don't know if this is totally accurate, but it's close enough for me. Three of the top four most deadly mental illnesses. When I understood that I had a mental illness, and that I was trying to treat it with food, that I was powerless over the food because I was powerless over the way that my mind worked. And bottles, they say in the big book, are only a symbol. And so I used food to deal with the pain of my life. And when I saw that, I really saw that I was powerless. And then in step two, learning to sort of sit with and allow that pain and allow God to come in, has been this incredible experience. But I'm here to talk about step four, so I'm going to fast forward. And obviously, step three, the reason I talk about these others is because to me, they're all so critical to have to come before four. But four, is where I start to do the deeper work and where I start to, once I'm powerless, once I'm willing to turn it over to God, once I'm willing to walk the path, I have to get rid of all the garbage inside or otherwise I'm going to eat again. And, I've been in program for 27 years and I've done a lot of four-step work. In fact, I've created the most beautiful four-step document that you've ever seen, beautifully color-coded to, because it helps me on my journey. And this is where I learned that all of the feelings that I have are my responsibility and no one else's. And that there's never anybody else to blame. and that there's never anybody else I have to go to or solve it with. I go to God, and God shows me the error in my thinking. Where am I off base that's causing my pain? And then when I start to do that, I start to be in less pain, and I need food less and less. And so it's this incredible tool for self-reflection, you know, and in doing it for so many years, I actually have, if anybody wants to contact me, I have a free 4-step workshop that I have, if anybody's interested. I don't know if you are. But just to walk through, and I found that there are several key things that really make a difference, and really seeing the sort of drug addictions of the character defects of how good it feels to be right and feel better and feel that anger than other people really keeps me separate from seeing how hurt and sad I am. And when I start to feel those feelings, then the resentments start to fade. And there's another part of the 4-step that this time around has made a huge difference for me, because I went back to the books, the 12 and 12, the big book, and just really looked at it for myself and said, what did it say? It said, take a searching and fearless moral inventory. And as much as I love the 4-step, the way they have it in the big book, I said, you know, I tried to go to the letter of what it was saying in there. And so I started to map out the different, I started to really watch myself. And when I reached for the food or when I had a craving, what was really going on? And I started to see some incredible things. I started to see that when I wanted to reach for the food, there was this hungry monster sort of in me, this energy. And I started to sort of sit with that. And I started to learn how to sit with these strong impulses in me and just sort of watch them and bring God to these impulses. And I noticed there were times where I just wanted something fun to eat. And I started to look underneath, what is that? What's going on? It's because there's a part of me, a hurt, wounded child part of me that says there's nothing good for me in this world. And then as I started to look under that, I started to see this horrible loneliness. And so I was using food to treat horrible loneliness. And by doing this sort of inventory in this way and looking at what's really going on in the moment and what's underneath what's going on in the moment, I'm able to bring that loneliness to God, and that loneliness is dissipating. And my cravings for food, you know, it's like I have kids around here all the time, and they have candy bars and stuff, and they offer me stuff, and I literally have no interest. So it's not the physical recovery that is meaningful to me today. It's, you know, that person who had to eat a second dinner at 2 a.m. It's absolutely miraculous. I mean, there's potato chips in my house, and I don't look at them, and cookies, and I'm not interested, because with God, I'm addressing these deeper things, and that's the real value of the 4-step, is to see what's really getting to us, and how are we thinking, and where are we off base, and that God can bring us back to truth, which is, like the last speaker shared, God does care for me, and with God, I am not alone, you know, and I don't have to solve these things myself. I don't have to solve anything. I just need to be willing to open and be shown. So very grateful to all of you. I'm very grateful that this meeting is here. It's the best OA meeting I've ever come across. And so thank you all for being of service, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to share.
Thank you, Evan R. Step 5.
It's actually Evan U. It's Evan U. I'm sorry.
Evan U.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Evan U. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Crystal R. from Toronto, Canada. Star 1 to unmute, Crystal.
Hi, Leah, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, thanks so much. Hi, my name is Crystal R. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. I'm not well today, so I apologize if I cough or sneeze in between. I'm very grateful to be speaking about step five today. Before recovery, I was over 250 pounds. My doctors told me I wouldn't make it past the age of 30s, really past my 30s. But more importantly, food just owned me. I binged every single day with the full intention of binging every single day, with the full intention of eating myself to death. And that's because for me, food was not just food. It was not about the taste, actually. It was an anesthetic for me. It just made everything go away. All that stuff in my head just went away, and it just flatlined me, and I felt safe. So asking me to not eat food was like asking me not to breathe. And when I came into AA, I finally found out what was wrong with me, that I had this allergy of the body and the twist of the mind, but more importantly, that I have a spiritual problem, that I really truly believed that everything was about me and everything is on me, what the big book calls selfishness. And those, if you really believe that, that's not livable. No wonder I needed an anesthetic to get through any 24-hour period. But in this program, I also found the solution that works. So I put down all the food behaviors, and all the food quantity. I worked the steps from the big book with a recovered sponsor, and I found a relationship with God that saves me from this disease every single day. And today, 6 years into recovery, I've received miracle after miracle. Not only that I don't eat those alcoholic foods for the last 6 years, that I'm in a normal body weight, that nobody really recognizes me from the girl that I used to be, but that I don't need or want an anesthetic anymore. I'm awake in my life. I feel everything. I go through everything. I'm a completely different person. And a big turning point in my recovery was the first step five that I did. Not because I sat and kind of told another person and God just my whole life story, but because I did five things that really helped me move forward in my recovery. The first is that the fearless and searching inventory that I did in step four did its job. It convinced me. The purpose of it was not just to write everything out in my life and list all the people that I was angry with, but really it convinced me that the way I'm living my life is not working. It can't be that all these people were wrong. The common denominator is me. And I came to my step five with not this attitude of like sitting back and like, sponsor, come on, agree with me. Don't you think these people did me wrong? I came back with this, came to my step five with this humble attitude of like, I don't even care if they did me wrong. I can't live like this anymore. Something's wrong in how I see the world, and I want to change it. If I can't change it, then I want God to change it. And one of the examples was with my mom. My mom was like the number one villain on my step four. And I remember reading out my whole step five, you know, to my sponsor. I remember we did it in person. I was at her house, at her dining table. And I, you know, read out my step four on my mom, my dad, my sister, et cetera. And with my mom, there's constantly this, you know, I have to protect myself from her. She's so mean to me. She never protected me. She's a cowardly person because she didn't do X, Y, and Z. And after I finished reading everything, my sponsor sat back and she was like, wow, your mom is such a courageous woman. Do you see how she protected you here, here, and here? And it was almost like someone had said to me, the moon is square and the sun is made of cotton balls. Like, it was just ridiculous. Like, I had spent my whole life believing a particular story. It felt like a punch in the gut. But I had come to this step five with a decision. I'm going to see my whole life differently. And so I did. And it completely changed. It was very scary for me to see my whole life differently like that. But it was what was necessary for me to recover. The second is I didn't hold anything back. There were things in my life where I was 100,000% sure I would take this to my grave. If anyone ever knew, they would hate me. My sponsor would leave me. I would go to jail. And I was taught that anything I hold back or anything I keep secret, the disease will use against me. And anything I bring to the light, God will use for my recovery. And I'm actually very grateful because I came to my step five kind of shivering and terrified of saying that one thing. And my sponsor suggested, why don't you tell me the worst thing first? And I'm so glad I did that because once I got that out, it was everything else was a lot easier, but I felt so free at last. The third thing I did was that I didn't just, I did my step five with a person who didn't just sort of listen to everything that I told her, she pointed out the patterns for me, patterns that I was living my life in that don't work, so that I could take that into my step 6 and 7 and ask God to remove them. Things like, you know, if love doesn't come to me in the exact format that I want it, whatever is given to me is useless. If someone scares me, I cozy up to them because I use them to protect me. Or I do things insincerely, meaning that I don't do anything just for the pure joy of doing it. I do it so I can get something in return. And those patterns were not working for me. They were causing me so much pain, but more importantly, they were taking me back to the food every single time and to that self-obsessed thinking. And I had to be willing to let those go in step 6 and 7. So the step 5 was pivotal in helping me know what I was taking to God in step 6 and 7. Now, the fourth thing is I didn't take action, restraint of pen and tongue, because after I finished my step 5, I was like a ball of epiphanies. It was just like, oh my gosh, I see my whole life differently. And oh my goodness, my mom did this and my dad did that. And oh, I want to fix all these things. I want to call them up. I want to tell them all my insights. And I'm so grateful that I was told not to do that. There's a reason that there's step 6, 7, and 8 before I interact with another human being and sort of dump all this on them, you know, so because I can cause a lot of harm. So it was important for me to just sit. And that was the part which was to follow the instructions in the big book. After my step 5, I came home. I sat quietly. I reviewed my work over to see had I missed anything. And I'm very grateful that I did, because God revealed I had missed a big fear that I hadn't talked to my sponsor about. And I called her up immediately and it closed it off. At the end of my step 5, there was no secrets now that the disease could hold against me. It felt like I was walking in the sun, like pure light for the first time in my life. There was no secrets, and I could feel the presence of God. The second thing is that I saw my whole story differently. It's like my life story. It was actually like the show Full House. I don't know if you know that show. It's like a really wholesome, happy place. But I was living my life like I was in the show Breaking Bad, like I was in the show where I'm like a criminal and I have to fight for my life every single day. And when I realized the discrepancy between what my life was and how I was behaving, fighting for my life, I didn't want to be like that anymore. I wanted to live in peace. And that was the third thing. The third and most important thing I got out of my step 5 was I was now willing. I got to a place where I'm like, I don't want these patterns anymore. And now I was ready to go into my step 6 and 7, where I have to be willing to let go of defects and patterns that I have depended on for decades. But without this pivotal step 5, I never would have done that, which would have never gotten me the recovery I have today. Thanks for letting me share and pass.
Thank you, Crystal R. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Cheryl A. from Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. Happy birthday and anniversary to A Vision for You, who an organization of a 12-step meeting that is just a joy and in my life. I'm so grateful, and I'm so grateful to be learning with all of you. I have been in program for 36 years. I'm a 54-year-old woman who got into this program when I was 18 years old. I am at a normal weight today, thank you God, where I've been for many, many years. I used to weigh more than 50 pounds more than I am now, and I have also weighed much less than I am now, and I have done everything in between. And today, I never thought that I would be able to live in the way that I currently live. So thank you to this program, which again is just a gift that is indescribable, as I know it is for all of us. So this step is so fascinating because it takes up so little space in the big book. On page 76, it introduces this. If we can answer to our satisfaction, and this is referencing back step 5, then we look to step 6, and it's just a few lines. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? And we come up with what is objectionable because we've just done a fourth step, and we really get clear about it in the fifth step. And then it moves right on to the prayer that we say when we do our seventh step, and that's it. And at the same time, if you look at the 12 and 12, there's a real paradox here, because it says at the very beginning of the sixth step, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. So if it's something that happens so quickly, when you take a look at the amount of space that the first step takes up and the amount of space the 12th step takes up and the amount of space the sixth step takes up, we would think, wow, this is just not, we do it and we move on. And that is what we do, except the language in the 12 and 12, and we know from our lived experience that this is one of the toughest ones we have. What has been blocking us from God? And we're supposed to now say a prayer, and yet a few pages later in the 12 and 12, it says, that this is basically a step that we, here it is, it says on page 65, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Is AA's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning on this lifetime job. Lifetime job. It takes up a few lines, and yet it's a lifetime job. Why is this step so difficult and so paradoxically simple at the same time? In steps 1, 2, and 3, we are doing what Sandy B says, who's an alcoholic who I like to listen to, and he says that the whole program can be summarized in 2 words, let go. Let go. So in the first 3 steps, we are letting go of the idea that we can use food or food behaviors to feel better. We're letting go. We're admitting our powerlessness over that. And we are letting go of the idea that I can manage my life, that there's a power out there that I need, that's outside, accessible inside, but it's not within the human being of me, other than to access the power that is greater than me. And then we make a decision, and then we move on. We're moving on to letting go in 4 and 5. Well, what do I have to let go of now? I've got to look at what is blocking me from God. In step 6, there's another layer of letting go and surrender, which is about breaking the habit of being myself. I now see what is objectionable to me. I don't want to keep using my selfishness, my fear, my dishonesty, my self-seeking behaviors to run my life and manage my discomfort around living. But it's something but I have habits of mind, behavior, and defects that I just go to by default. I go to them. So as we progress, there are these other things that I need to give up on, but I need to know what they are. So I learn what they are in step 5, 4, and 5. And then I come to this step, and I don't just ask God to remove it right away, because I've got to get willing to have him do it completely, to become entirely ready. That's what this is about. By my own devices, I would cut away a branch on a tree of my character defects. And every time it comes up, I want to cut away the branch and cut away the branch and cut away the branch. My habit would be to use my own will to stop doing what I'm doing. But this step and the step that comes after in step 7 teaches me that I can't just cut away the branches, because they just grow back. They grow back and they grow back and they grow back. I need my higher power to come along and just extract the trunk and remove the tree that's outside my window. I can't do that. I can't pull up that trunk. I cannot do it. I can cut away the branches here and there, but they grow back and they grow back and they grow back. So to be entirely ready, I need to be clear. What is driving me? What are these objectionables? It's a process of uncover it, discover it, and discard it by what happens in this next step, and humbly asking God to remove these character defects. In the meantime, it doesn't happen right away. It's a lifetime of work. It's a lifetime of work. So while I'm waiting for God to remove them, I become entirely ready because they're utterly objectionable to me. So then I've learned that I need to learn what is the opposite of selfishness and what is the opposite of perfectionism. Because as I'm waiting for God to remove them, pull up that tree trunk, I can start to go against myself. Joe and Charlie say this in when they talk about step six. I have to go against myself a bit. Now, we've got power that's coming in. And in the third step, it tells us that we start to feel like the sense of being reborn already. Even before we get halfway through, we feel that, as it says in the big book. So I've got some power now that I'm beginning to rely on as I begin to work towards being loving, being humble, the opposite of my perfectionism, being kind, being other-focused, the opposite of my selfishness. And as I begin to identify, well, what is the opposite of these objectionables in my life? I become entirely ready in this ongoing process. And then I have found that God does remove these defects of character. And interestingly, and then I'll start to wrap up, it does say we're entirely ready and God will remove all. This is an amazing step of perfection itself. Entirely ready, and this other word, all of these defects, God removes them. It's perfect because I don't remove them. God is removing them. And in the realm of God, the word perfect can live. In my realm, I'm just going to be cutting away the branches over and over and over. As I do this work in step six, as I become entirely ready, as I learn, as I uncover, discover, discard, more and more light starts to shine through in my life, and I get more and more revelation about what I'm meant to do, how to be of service, how to go against the fact that I am terrified. I don't have to do that. I can break the habit of being myself, of relying on these defects because I'm habituated to them and because I'm wired for them. And step six is the beginning of that process, this lifetime process that so graces my life with so much light that I can begin to live in as the woman, the opposite of these defects, so that I can be of service to my family, my community, my other compulsive overeaters. I am so grateful that I know how to live through these 12 steps and that I have a community through all of you to do this alongside me. Thank you so much. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Cheryl A. Step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Lisa B. from South Carolina. Lisa B., star one to unmute. Lisa B., star one to unmute. Lisa, perhaps unmute your own personal phone. You are unmuted on the moderator code.
Good morning, Leah. Can you hear me now?
Indeed.
Thank you. I apologize. I had to hang up and call back. I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And happy anniversary, A Vision for You, and thank you so much for everyone's shares. I've been listening to Vision since November of 2015, And I introduced myself as a newcomer. I always say that's one of my best days of my life, really. I have been abstinent and recovered since January of 2016. I was able to meet a recovered sponsor, and we went through the big book. And I just want to share my brief history. The way the disease showed itself for me was binge eating, restricting, and compulsive exercise. And I have felt controlled and ruled by it and unable to stop since I was 24 years old, and I'm 61 now. I did go into a treatment facility when I was 24 years old, and I learned about the value of the tools, such as a food plan, and my recovery stopped there. I experienced what eventually became a white-knuckle abstinence for 5 years, and I returned to the food and was in relapse, chronic relapse, really, though I had never really been recovered, for 23 years. That's where I was when I was led to A Vision for You. And coming to A Vision for You, I heard recovered voices, which is an amazing experience. I still love hearing recovered voices because I was convinced it's not possible to be recovered from this disease. And also, they sound so happy and free. How do you do this happily? And I began to hear on this amazing meeting, therefore, the main part of the alcoholic centered is in his mind rather than his body. I mean, this was profound stuff that I was hearing. I learned about the doctor's opinion, entire abstinence. I learned that my abstinent food plan treats my allergy. And I learned that the 12 steps treats the greater aspect of my disease, which is my mind. That what we who have suffered alcohol torture must believe that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. I mean, these are great things. They're all in the big book, and that's what I started hearing. So about the steps treating my mind, and that this is the greater aspect of my problem, that I needed a spiritual awakening and a personality change, that abstinence, like, is great, it gets me in the door, but it's not sufficient to bring about recovery and to have neutrality with the food and cease fighting. So I like our previous speaker shared, you know, there's such a small little bit in the big book on the seventh step, that beautiful prayer. So I did refer to the AA 12 and 12. And the AA 12 and 12 tells me that humility is a foundation stone of all the steps, and that without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. And that my lack of humility had been my crippling handicap. I did truly fail to see that character building and spiritual values had to come first. And I have been demanding more than my share of really everything, security, prestige, romance, everything. And where I was when I came in these rooms of A Vision for You is just convinced that there is not enough of anything that I need. And that I saw through working this amazing step and all the steps is that spiritual values had to come first. But, you know, the seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits me with humility as my guide to move out from myself toward others and towards God. But, you know, how do you do that? So I had to be bludgeoned and have repeated humiliations. And the AA 12 and 12 talks about that. I mean, I got it with step one, with God's grace, that yes, humility and I'm powerless. But I had to come around to see that this same amazing, precious quality, and the 12 and 12 refers to it as a nourishing ingredient. Oftentimes it did not feel nourishing, and sometimes it still doesn't, that I ought to be willing to try humility in seeking the removal of my character defects, just as I did when I admitted that I was powerless over food. I also see with the step seven is that a life based on unsatisfied demands and a self-centered fear, which is a huge part of all my defects, it's impossible to be comfortable in my own skin. So, you know, my experience with the step seven is just like it says, repeated humiliations. Doing the steps in order in a state of abstinence and going through all the steps has produced an amazing effect. And just like we learn in the doctor's opinion, you know, that we seek in effect. We are effect seekers. And I want to share with you some of the things that have happened for me. One is I have peace today. I have peace because I have found when I experience discomfort, I don't die. You know, that was very difficult in the beginning, and sometimes it still is. I'm learning to grow up and to delay gratification. And that started with abstinence for sure. But really, the action steps of 4 through 9 have taught me, well, I know I'm focusing on step 7, but all the steps really have taught me that there is going to be some discomfort and pain involved, and that it's a process of removal. It's really not about a process of getting more, which is, you know, what I wanted my whole life, is to get more. Now, I do get more. That's the whole interesting thing. The more I let go of, the more I get. And that's why I have peace today, because in order to stay abstinent and to stay recovered and to have this amazing neutrality, I have had to let go of a lot, and I continue to let go of it. But I do it by depending on God and relying on God. You know, my blindness had been to my true purpose. I did not really get that my true purpose is to be of maximum use to myself, to God and the people around me. But I can't be of maximum use when I am being driven by unmet desires and demands and restless, irritable, and frustrated. So I've been forced, you know, I've had to deal with those flaws and defects which made a problem eater of me from the beginning. And I don't have to like doing it, but I do need to see the necessity of it. The other thing that has happened to me with this step is not only the peace and the serenity, but my outlook about ego puncturing and character building has changed. It's not a favorite thing, but it's brought healing of pain. And like some of our speakers have touched on today, the delusion that I've had about what other people and circumstances have done to me has really been switched around, and how I see how I have contributed to that pain in so many ways. And by allowing the nourishing ingredient of humility to come in, I've been able to let it go. You know, some of them has been like a blanket that I wanted to keep wrapped around me because it's comfortable, it's familiar. But these character defects are the obstacles that block me from the very objectives that I learn in the big book, which is to live at peace with God and others around me, to live at peace with myself, and to not be placing unreasonable demands on the world and people around me and God. I don't want obstacles that are going to block me from the very thing that I so desperately need, which is a deeper relationship that continues to grow with God. So I wanted to share that amazing prayer on page 76. You know, that seems to be the bulk of step 7. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So God decides what gets removed, how it gets removed, and what stays. It's really putting myself in such a place of humility, of total reliance on God and my Creator, and that He's going to be the one that gives me the strength, and He's going to be the one that guides me to do not my bidding, but it's His bidding. And I love how the word amen is there. You know, it's because amen is not after the step 3 prayer in the big book. And I guess, you know, I feel like I'm kind of winding down. I did get a little thrown off course here with the not being able to get on. But I'm so grateful to A Vision for You and the fellows that do service regularly. And I love you all. Thank you, and thank you to my higher power. I pass.
Thank you, Lisa B.
Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Susan G. from California.
Thank you, Leah. Good morning, everybody. Susan G. in Los Angeles, California. Always a privilege and very, very humbling to be invited to share my story, and specifically today on step 8, making that list. To quickly qualify, I came into these rooms in the early 80s when I moved here from England. I did not hang out in a crowd where I would have found OA, and now I can tell you when I visit and go home, I have a plethora of friends. I go to conventions there and meetings all over the place. I was 250 pounds at last count, size 26 dress. I'm just over 5'6", and I don't weigh that anymore. I'm in a normal size body. I've given away over 100 pounds, and wow, when I look at that, almost a quarter of a century, what a miracle, and that's all God and not me and this fellowship I never knew I craved. When Leah started out with her beautiful introduction this morning, she spoke about the spiritual chain reaction, Ebby to Bill to Bob to Roseanne S. And I would be remiss if I didn't say or speak about Maxine, who was my sponsor, one of those first 10 to 15 women in West Los Angeles near where I live. And she was my sponsor for 10 years. And I'm eternally grateful. And just a little tidbit, she was OA's first treasurer. So that being said, oh my gosh, don't you just wish we could say amen at the end of step 7 and let's move on and help other people. And I remember thinking, and this was a long time ago, obviously, but I do remember certain things very, very clearly. Making that list, my first inventory was all about my family, because once you heard what they had done to me, this was just going to work a little bit differently for me. But I certainly had a sponsor who took no nonsense, and that was not going to be the case. In the AA 12 and 12, it tells me that step 8, this is what it's going to do for me. I'm going to learn to live with others, and it's going to be a fascinating adventure. Well, there's a fabulous promise, isn't it? So I made this list, and it wasn't very long because I didn't have specific members of my family on there. So I had one institution, one store where I stole a lot of food from, and oh, that was just the worst. And I begged with my little flip phone at the time not to have to go. And, you know, they were on the list and we got through that. And then on the list, I had my mom, and forgive me, some of you will have heard this story. My mom was a paranoid schizophrenic. I grew up with her until I was around 14 and didn't see her for many, many moons. And God starts to rewire my heart while I was working these steps. And I wanted somehow to go there to see her, but I had to forgive her. And this, she was on the list, but it wasn't going to be a traditional amends because she didn't have the capability to hear it, to understand it. But how could I open my heart and give love to her? And on page 77, it tells me that my real purpose is to fit myself and to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. So how could I do that? How could I forgive her and occasionally call her and go and see her, maybe once a year when I would go home to England? And it was like, wow, how could I do this? But healing the past with others is going to bring me closer to God and to my fellows and to improve my whole attitude and outlook on life. It was now starting to become more than my weight loss. It was now starting to become more than that pink cloud, which if you've ever been where I was, and some of you have been over and some of you have been under, pretty fabulous to start walking around in a normal size body. But I knew from past experiences I could not keep it if I wasn't fearless and thorough. So I made what was a living amends to my mom. And I know I'm not on step 9, but I had her on that list. And Maxine and I discussed how I would do this, how I would open my heart and start to think back at fun things that went on before she got really, really sick. Just like me. Her. She loved to do her hair and makeup. She loved fashion. I could remember going shopping with her. My mom had great style. All of these things started to bring back some joy in life. And it says on the bottom of page 77 in the AA 12 and 12, this reopening of emotional wounds, some old, some perhaps forgotten, and some still painfully festering. Yes, they were very, very painful. A lot of things happened in our house and outside of our house due to my mum's behaviors that were embarrassing and mortifying as a child. And it says at first look, they are going to look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. If you are hoping that you can avoid this, it was not a pointless piece of soul surgery. It was one of the most life-giving things that I ever did. I went to see my mom. I didn't have to explain to her why I was there. She actually welcomed me with open arms. And by doing so, I was able to let others in. I was able to let God flow through me and all around me. And today, you know, I still have to make apologies. Still can be a silly billy sometimes. I still don't always pause and let God in. It gets better and better each time because, God, if you would just let me go this way, I think it would be better, but it never, ever is. It never, ever is. You know, I walk really humbly with God each day, and my mom passed away several years ago. And when she did, I was able to feel that sadness for her and for her life that she had. But I still had joy in my heart with those memories that I was able to create, albeit they may not have been your typical family memories before or after I made that living amends, but they're the ones that I have, and I have no hatred in my heart, and that is the most important thing. Happy birthday, Vision, for you. I can never, ever thank all of you and OA for everything that you have done to help recreate my life. So with that, I will pass, and thank you so much, Leah.
Thank you, Susan G. Step 9, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Kathy S. from Georgia.
Good morning, Leah, and all my fellows in a vision for you, and thank you so much for this opportunity to be here. Yeah, I first came into OA in 2010. Because I knew what I was doing with food was not at all right. But I wasn't overweight. And I'd like to point out, this is not Overweight Anonymous. It's Overeaters Anonymous. And I definitely qualified. I binged a lot on my alcoholic ingredients. And then I would be able to stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. And I couldn't understand. I just loved food. I grew up alcoholic home in a humble little town called Jupiter, Florida, which is now making its way on the map. Grew up on the beach, and my dad was into boats and boating, so there were boating magazines, pictures of women, beautiful women all over the boats, and I grew up thinking that I had to look like that in order to be loved. And I've been on a life pursuit of having the perfect body, and it was never enough. So I came in here oftentimes underweight, and yet I was still binging, and it was hard to convince myself that I belonged here because I was so good at pretending, so good at hiding my feelings of anxiety and fear, hiding what I thought about others or what others were doing for me, just not even knowing my feelings. My brain, my ego just took over. So having that as my background, I controlled it through exercise and through trying a gajillion different diets, and nothing worked. It just kept growing in intensity, which brings me here. With step 9, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for this step, because it requires a change. Amends is all about changing. How am I going to show up differently today? It requires, in steps 1 through 3, turning, you know, understanding my powerlessness. I can't run and hide anymore, and I have to be willing to go to any lengths. I have to trust that God gives me what I need, and then eliminate all other options, as someone shared earlier. I love that, with just making that decision to turn my will over to God. In step 4, knowing my defects. my fears, and then sharing it with someone else. Step five, that was a real change for me. Instead of keeping it in, hiding, pretending like I have it all together. And then six and seven, being willing to humbly ask God to remove these defects. Only then can we really turn to step nine. And I will admit, like, as a newcomer and to the newcomers, you know, I was scared of this. This step really scared me from taking the steps because I was like, oh, I don't want to do step nine. I don't want to really tell people the truth. I don't want to face what I did. But trust me when I say that that these steps go in order for a reason. And by the time I got to step nine, and after entire abstinence and thoroughly working these steps, you know, I was ready to do what is asked of me in this step. And in this step, it talks about good judgment. I mean, in the 12 and 12, it starts off good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. These are the qualities we shall need when we take step nine. We have to have a right attitude, as it says. I can't have any resentment. I have to work those out in steps four and five. And when the time comes, I have found this to be true with almost any situation I'm being faced with, because I fear a lot about the future. People who take my 10 steps know all about it. I am a future tripper. And I'm not ready. I'm scared. I'm nervous, or I'm resentful because the time has not come yet. And even in step one, it's about timing. I have to do a lot of binging. I had to do a lot of binging to get to that level of desperation and the pain and the willingness to just not do it anymore. And also God's timing to remove that obsession. And only then was I able to move through the steps quickly. Step nine, you know, when I was asked to do this, I was like, oh, man, because I'm like, I didn't have any earth shattering things, again, because I was a pretender. Some people might think that's a good thing, but it wasn't. However, you know, there were some. Yes, I had to do some restitution, pay food banks back, pay a former place of work, do a donation, things like that. I had kind of, in the past, I had worked the steps times, not in entire abstinence, but I had written letters to my family, so they were kind of sick of them. But what I'm talking about, you know, when we talk about faith without works, also mentioned in the chapter, step nine in the big book. And also I love on page 83, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. So most of my amends are about how I'm showing up today. How am I going to show up differently? And I love in this step how the promises, when we're halfway through, the promises are mentioned. And, you know, we have a new way of living, a new freedom, a new happiness. And I was recently on vacation, and I'd just like to stress, you know, as an addict, I really wanted a big dramatic story. I was like, ooh, maybe this is where it's going to happen. I'm going to have this big thing with my husband or something. But don't miss the miracles that can happen in the ordinary. I had a friend, a childhood friend, and that I reached out to. I initiated this and reached out, said, hey, I'm going to be in town. And we got together. I witnessed the promises, the fear of people and economic insecurity, God working on that. I was able to be present. I was more interested in her and her family. I showed up in authenticity. And I didn't miss the miracle. God sent a manatee. We got to go out in a boat with her and her husband, and he cued the manatees, you know, and I was able to feel great joy. I felt grief because we drove past my childhood home or actually lot, because now it's a much beautiful home. And then spend time with my husband, you know, be there, be available to initiate intimacy and adventure. I made dinner reservations. I had no self-pity regarding the food. I had a lot of focus on gratitude and prayer. And, you know, growing up too, I always believed I needed to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something else. And even in the moment of feeling the fear of, gosh, I wish we hadn't left. Look at, you know, I never appreciated growing up on the beach in South Florida, right on the water in the intercoastal waterway. And yet I was like, you know, this really, where we are is a great place to raise kids. God was so in control of my life. I resented being a stay-at-home mom, and today I show up for my daughter. I passed on a living amends to her too. She had a tough day with her daughter, and I was able to point out, you know, there's nothing wrong with you or your daughter. You guys are new at this. You know, I was able to encourage, to relate my past experience, another promise. It was useful. I didn't, you know, try to give her advice or lecture her or try to fix her. I listened, you know, I was there for her. To my family of origin, I sent pictures and videos to be in touch. This was another living amends, because often I just go stay. I'm only kind of make outreach calls to them when it's a holiday. And, you know, just God brings the opportunities for amends to continue. I can say yes in the face of fear and just surrender. Positivity at the airport yesterday when we were flying home despite the IT outage, and talk to strangers. You know, these are all miracles of the steps and of the program, and amends as well, just showing up differently. And wow, it's already my time, so I'm going to pass. Thank you so much for this opportunity, Leia.
Thank you, Kathy S. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Stephen G. from Canada. Star 1 to unmute, Stephen G. Stephen G, star 1 to unmute. Thank you, everybody, for your patience while we work through some technical challenge here.
Hi, Leah. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Leah. I'm Stephen G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Toronto, Canada. And welcome to newcomers, and welcome to people coming back from relapse. And thank you to everybody for your shares so far. I'm going to share briefly about my experience of the disease of compulsive overeating and how I found the solution. And then I'm going to focus a bit on the text and the instructions in step 10. And then I'll share an example of one of my step 10s and hope that's helpful to people. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous about 15 years ago. My disease of compulsive overeating manifested in weight gain and obesity, although I now recognize that the problem is much deeper than that. And my peak weight was about 300 pounds. I fluctuated between 160 and 300 pounds. For most of my life, I lost 50 pounds, I don't know, countless amount of times, and I tried everything. I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and it helped. I got some relief, but I took what I needed, and I left the rest, and I negotiated with abstinence, and I negotiated with the steps, and I had some predictable results. I had worsening binges that left me suicidal. About 7 years ago, I discovered the Vision for You meeting and the Big Book, and my life was transformed. The Big Book helped me to understand the nature of the problem, and it's very simple. I have an abnormal physical response to certain foods, ingredients, and behaviors, produces the phenomenon of craving I can't stop. And then the second part of the disease, I have this mental obsession, so that no matter how much damage it does to me, I will continue to go back to it. And this problem is permanent, it's progressive, and it's fatal. And in my case, that fatality will be by suicide. Thanks to this program, I've been maintaining a 75-pound weight loss and a healthy body size for several years now. And it was essential for me to get to the point of complete hopelessness. In the chapter Vision for You, it talks about, you know, I will not be able to imagine life with eating or without eating. Then I will know loneliness, as few do, and I certainly came to that point. And the book tells me the solution is entire abstinence plus a spiritual experience as a result of working these steps. So I had to put down the food, and then I had to work these steps like my hair was on fire, because I very quickly get restless, irritable, and discontent. And the book shows me the exact steps in which to have that spiritual experience, and it keeps it very, very simple. And as we've heard from people before, who spoke before me, during step 4 through 9, I start to see what the real problem is. And the real problem is this thing called self and all of its manifestations. I had no idea that I was so abnormally self-centered and self-focused. And it manifests itself in resentments, fears, and harms done to other people. And the steps helped me to clear out, as the book says, the wreckage of my past, because now I need to be connected to this power. And I am now no longer vigilant about food, because I've achieved some degree of neutrality once I get to step 9, some sense of peace and serenity. The food isn't calling out to me anymore. But I have to be vigilant about my emotional state, because disturbances will cause me to become blocked from this higher power. And when I'm starting to get emotionally disturbed, I know that something is going on, and I know that one of these quote-unquote character defects is starting to become operational. And so the step is read as continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. And it talks about, it says continue. And if we look at the paragraph which gives us the specific instructions on page 84, this word continue is used 4 times. Continue to take personal inventory. Continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It should continue for our lifetime. So it's telling me that this is something that I must be persistent in. And certainly I wouldn't want to be persistent in this unless I was hopeless. And so it gives me very specific instructions. Continue to watch for this. Basically, continue to watch for an emotional disturbance. And when it comes up, I turn to God. There are certain situations where I'll discuss it with somebody if I've harmed anyone. And then I resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help, because the problem is self-centeredness. And I will drift back towards self-centeredness. And this process helps me drift back towards God. And it says love and tolerance is our code. And so I'll give you a brief example of a step 10 for me. Recently, I got an email from a colleague who's my supervisor at work. I was very critical about some of my work. I got an immediate resentment. And so I had to pause and look at it. And when I looked at it, I'm resentful against her. The cause is she said this. It affected my self-esteem, my security, because it's my job. And there's fear. The fear is that somebody thinks I'm not good enough. And so I say a prayer for her. The resentment prayer is pretty clearly outlined in step 4. And then I look at what's my part. I'm being selfish. She's not following my script of how she's supposed to be. I want her to be the way I want her to be so that I feel a sense of ease and comfort. I'm being self-seeking. I'm looking to the external world, people, places, and things to get my sense of ease and comfort. I'm being dishonest. Am I inadequate? Of course not. That's not true. Is this about me? No, it's not. It's about a work environment. Is she the problem? No, of course not. It's my thinking that's the problem here. And the fear is, like I said, that I'm somehow inadequate. So am I relying on finite self or infinite God? Of course, I'm relying on finite self. And so the big book gives me a fear prayer. God, take away my fear and direct my attention to what God would have me be. What would God have me be? God would have me be tolerant, patient, kind to my colleague, not react. Are there any amends in this situation? Thankfully, there were none, because I didn't react. And I did the step 10 every day for several days before I responded. Otherwise, I would have responded in anger, not in love. And then what was my plan to resolutely turn my thoughts to somebody I can help? I reached out to a colleague to see how they were doing. And so this process helped me to go from resentment to being connected with God again. And I do this as many times as are necessary. And there's a number of ways to share it with people. You can do it by text, you can do it by phone call. I happen to do it by a voice message system on WhatsApp. And I have several people that I share step 10s with. And then finally, if we look down at the next paragraph, it says that the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor afraid. That is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And again, it says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. And then farther down in the paragraph, it says we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So it's telling me I need to do this. These are warnings. I need to do this. And if I look back in my own recovery, when I've relapsed, it's because I wasn't willing to do this step when necessary. And similarly in people that I sponsor. And when I do this, I remain unblocked. I remain peaceful. And I can do step 11 because I'm now connected to my higher power. And in step 12, I have something to offer people. So that's my experience of step 10, and it's revolutionized my experience of recovery, and I'm very grateful for it. Thank you. Can I still be heard?
We don't hear you, Leah.
Leah, star one.
Thank you, Stephen G., for your service. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Elaine B. from Massachusetts.
Thank you so much, Leah. Happy anniversary, 12 years of life. Changing meetings. Thank you so much for everybody that helps keep this meeting going, make it possible, shares, listens, takes newcomers up. You're just all wonderful. I'm so grateful for the many that have had a chance to experience the life-changing impact of the study of the Big Book and learning from all of you. In June of 2013, I sat in the back row at a face-to-face OA meeting planning what binge food I was going to get as soon as it was over. A friend clearly noticed the changes in me because of my relapse and gave me the number for A Vision for You on June 15, 2013. The next day, I tuned in and I heard Joe's special edition entitled, We Call This Plain Insanity. I heard my story. I totally identified in, and I started listening to A Vision for You daily. I took phone numbers. I found a sponsor who brought me through the steps in about 3 months. My previous sponsor, I had been trying to get through for 3 years. So I chose the food instead, but now sponsoring others has helped me grow deeper in this design for living and practicing these principles in all my affairs. Also, to maintain an 80-pound weight loss. I'm so grateful to A Vision for You, to God and program, to have 10 years of sobriety and serenity around food, to accept life on life's terms, one day at a time. Bumps are what you climb on, going farther and growing stronger. God has blessed my marriage, my family relationships, every aspect of my life. As I continue to seek to know and do his will, which is the foundation of step 11, which I'll repeat, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 11 is three parts. There's an AM part, there's a PM part, and then all throughout the day part. It reminded me of that old song, sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening, sugar at supper time. Anybody relate to that? No. It's a whole new way that will lead, would lead to relapse. But all day, every day, the 11th step brings you sweet serenity and relationships with God and others that are better than you could ever ask, think, or imagine. I am hearing that somebody is unmuted. so if you could please check your mute status. Thank you. I've used some keywords in step 11 to share how this step continues to impact, influence, and improve my life one day at a time. So thought required letting go of self-reliance and self-will run riot and learning to go to God more and more. It took time to accept that the answers may not come right away, but they will come if my house is in order. Now I can rely that on an all-knowing, all-loving, all-powerful, infinite God instead of my finite self. I've learned that everything is not urgent or a rush and that it does not all depend on me. Prayer. God wants me to ask for good, orderly direction. God invites me to ask. What a blessing to pause. It's so wonderful to ponder. It's so soothing to relax and take it easy, to not struggle, because I know the answers will come. I can put everything and anything in God's hands. He'll show me my part, if there is any. I can care, but I don't have to carry. And if I follow the dictates of a higher power, I will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what my present circumstances. I've seen that happen over and over. Meditation. It's a wonderful gift to share times of meditation with my husband 5 or 6 days a week and with friends 3 times a week. For several years, we've been doing this. Sharing reflections continuously deepens my relationship with God and others, just like hearing your shares on A Vision for You. Improve. As my relationship with God gets deeper and deeper, the depth of my satisfaction, joy, fulfillment, and seeking and doing His will has grown to be more important than any other relationship in my life. God first. Conscious contact. God is always with me, for me, to lean on, to lean into. My ever-growing foundation of trust and reliance has expanded so much over the years that I've been involved in the Vision for You. It is truly the most important part of my day. I spend a lot of time in prayer and connecting God, Him with others in meetings, nature, reading, etc. Growing trust and reliance. A sponsor had me send her a God sighting and a list of 5 gratitudes with my 11th step. I've continued to do this for many years, and it's built a track record of the relationship building and God's faithfulness that anchors my trust in and reliance even during hard times. Pause. When doubtful or agitated, I have a place to go even when I'm cranky or angry or stuck in self-will run riot. God and others in program get it. The steps provide a process to be restored to sanity and serenity. I can choose to push and plow right through or stop and pause and see what God would have me be. Knowledge for His will for us. The Big Book says every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve Thee? Thy will not mine be done. This is the proper use of the will. Conclude the period of medication. I had a typo there. I saved it because this is my medicine. By praying, we be shown all throughout the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever is needed to take care of such problems. What a relief. I don't need to run the show. He's the director. He's got this. He may not give me the whole plan in the morning, but will guide and instruct me throughout the day. And the power to carry that out. Step 11 ends with asking God for the power to carry out His will for us. When I ask, He moves. When I look back, I see the things which came to me were better than anything I could plan. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will live in a new and wonderful world no matter what your present circumstances. That page 100 promise continues to come through for me and will for you too. Thank you again for the opportunity to share, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Elaine B. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Harlan G. from Arizona.
Thank you very much, Leah. Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here for the 12th birthday of this amazing, amazing organization. We'll get to more about that a little later. Page 89 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me at the very top of the page that practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Nothing. And yet every day, almost every day of my life, I hear people telling me, I don't want to sponsor, and I'm afraid to sponsor, and I don't know how to sponsor. Well, you better be afraid not to, because if we don't sponsor, we are not going to recover. This is a 12-step program. This is not an 11-step program. And as I look at the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as the result, as the result of these steps, if I'm not eating, and I'm neutral, I better start sponsoring. I better get to it. And I take my people through very, very quickly. One of the biggest mistakes I see today in sponsorship is making it into something that it's not. And the Yiddish word of the day could be ungeblosen, overblown. Months and months and months I hear people taking other people through the steps, and there's no reason for it. Bill Wilson was working with people days after getting sober. Dr. Bob was sponsoring Bill Dotson days after getting sober. These early guys were sponsoring immediately after getting sober. So having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. What message is that? The message of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only message we have. If I'm transmitting Harlan's message, I could kill somebody because I don't know all things. I don't know anything. But the message of the Big Book is timeless and true, and the message of the Big Book has restored more people back to society from addiction than all other methods combined. And I have to take this very seriously. The recovery rate from cancer is higher than the recovery rate from compulsive overeating. This is very serious, and I have to take this seriously. And we are all carrying a message, whether we want to be carrying one or not. When my daughter was very, very young, we were living in Eugene, Oregon, and I was in complete relapse. I have 25 years of abstinence. I've lost a little over 500 pounds. But at this time, I was not yet back in recovery. And it was a Sunday morning like it is now. And my then wife had bought 35, 40% of a grocery store and was putting more food away than we could handle. And my little daughter, 19 months old at the time, opened up the refrigerator door, turned her little head toward her mother and said, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here." I wonder where she got that from. And if looks could kill, I would have been vaporized. Years later, I was watching a show about guys who won the lottery and were making amends to people they had robbed. She looked at the TV, looked at me, looked at the TV, looked at me, and said, "Oh, those guys are just doing their eighth and ninth step, right, Dad?" Without a word from me. We are all carrying a message, whether we want to be or we do not want to be. Dr. Bob gave us an inheritance forever when he said to us that no man looks as beautiful in God's eyes as when he is leaning over to help another man occupy the rung of the ladder on which he now stands. We have a message, and it is of depth and weight. We are the only people who have experienced the disease, and we are the only people who have experienced a recovery. And we are uniquely qualified to transmit that message because we speak and understand the language of the heart. To that still suffering person, we owe something, and that is to help them. To the world, we may be a person, and to that person, we can be the world. We can light them up, and we can give them something that the psychiatrist couldn't give them, the pay and way couldn't give them, the doctor couldn't give them, the psychologist couldn't give them, the acupuncturist couldn't give them. We can give them hope. We can give them the hope that maybe if we recovered, that they can too. Any idiot can count the seeds in an apple, but only God can count the apples in a seed. We never quite know the perpetuity of the message. Years ago, I had a friend, and his name was Scott. He died. He was an alcoholic, drug addict, and compulsive overeater. And on a Saturday night, he was manning the phones for AA on a rainy Los Angeles Saturday night. And he was sent with another man out to a motel in Los Angeles on the east side of town. And he talked to this man for about an hour and realized that the man was falling asleep. They let him go to sleep and they left. 5 years later, he is speaking at an Alcathon in San Diego, California. Talk, throws his big arms around him, gives him a bear hug, and says, "You saved my life." And my friend, "I don't believe I know you." And he says, "Oh, I better explain. You see, do you remember a few years ago you came out to a motel and you talked to a guy about his drinking? Yeah, I was hiding under the bed. And I heard every word you said, and I haven't had a drink since." You never know the perpetuity of the message that you're carrying. And there is an unbroken chain that started in Akron, Ohio, in June of 1935 that reached to you. We owe a debt of gratitude. And last but not least, the third part of the 12th step is to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you from the bottom of my heart to the renaissance of OA, a vision for you. To Leah M., to Melanie C., to Amy G., to Katie F., the service that you have done, the sun will never set on it. You are a force of recovery within OA. I'm going to quickly read the 12 step promises on page 100 and then I'll shut up. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Thank God for a vision for you. Thank God for each and every one of you that is on this line, whether you're on all the time or you're not, whether you're sharing or you're not, you're part of the tapestry. This is the greatest force of recovery within OA. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for each and every one of you who are my professors, my teachers, and my healers. And with that, I will pass. Thank you so much, Leah.
Thank you, Harlan G. Thank you to all our speakers today, Joe M., Leslie W., Rohan S., Evan U., Crystal R., Cheryl A., Lisa B., Susan G., Kathy S., Stephen G., Elaine B., and Harlan G. The share I gave for today's presentation, 21,589. That's 21,589. You have just heard 12 recovered compulsive overeaters, each who have described in their own personal way how the 12 steps and God have made a life-changing impact on their minds and hearts, producing a profound and revolutionary change, resulting in a spiritual awakening. 12 voices woven together, creating a powerful message of hope and possibility. 12 simple steps which anyone can apply. Thank you, A Vision for You Fellowship. Thank you, family. Thank you to each one of you who have helped in our high mission to carry the message of recovery. Thank you for your time, your effort, your continued support, and your dedication. You are all a blessing. I will now close from page 164. found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.